So I'm an alcoholic. My name is Michael L. I have been practicing the principles and following suggestions for 18 years, 11 months, and like 5 days. So, God willing, you know, at the end of this month, I'll celebrate 19 years. I didn't come here to tell you about how much time I got or how much time I do not have. I was kind of thinking about the 10-minute warm-up. You know, sometimes we go to meetings and, like, somebody shares and it's like an old, long, drawn-out share. And you can't even hear what they're sharing because you're like, God, it's only supposed to be a 5-minute share. He's on 7 minutes right now. You know what I mean? So you've already consent prior to investigation. You don't want to hear nothing he's got to say. Or, I mean, it's fair. You know what I mean? And you're good. It's like, Jesus Christ, won't they ever shut up? God, he shared. He did a 10-minute share. Oh, my God. So I was thinking, what am I going to come up here and bring to you guys for 10 minutes? And I don't have anything to bring, you know. But I think God might, you know. And that's the thing that that's good for me is that I have to remember that, you know, one of our old-timers in Fresno talks about, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous was here before me, and it will be here after me. You know, so yesterday, let me tell you just a little bit how I got here to the podium here today. So I work quite a bit. You know, I'm kind of busy guy, so I was really tired yesterday. I got home from work, and I was all hot and sweaty, and I was like, man, I'm finally done for the week. Take a shower, get into the AC. I was feeling good. I'm thinking, I think I'll take a nap. That would be a great idea. So I got in my bed. It was nice and comfortable. I had the fan going, AC. It's nice and quiet. I'm taking my nap, and I go off to sleep. And about 5 minutes into my nap, my phone rings. Son of a... Yeah, you know, the first thing, I didn't turn my ringer off. And, oh, God. I'm thinking, what do they want now? Who is it? So I look, and it's today's speaker that was supposed to be here today is a good friend of mine. And he was stuck in, I think, Tennessee or somewhere on business. And he couldn't make it back, and he was trying to get another speaker to come speak for you guys. And he called me, and I told him, okay, don't worry about it. We'll get somebody. You know what I mean? And I got Charlie's number, and I talked to Charlie, and I was like, well, you know what? If you guys can't find anybody else, if you can't find anybody else to do it, I'm willing to do it. So there I am putting, like, limitations and obligations on how willing I'm going to be automatically. You know what I mean? Well, if nobody else will get up there and do it on me. So, you know, pretty much Charlie just accepted my invitation to, or just so you know, we would love to have you. So, my alcoholic tendencies, I still try to not only do my best, but I believe that I should share the love and the program with everybody. So what my sponsor and I have been doing over the last numbers of years is that if I go out of town somewhere and I hear that they need a speaker, I'm like, hey, I got a great speaker in Fresno. You know, a great guy, and he's a great speaker. He would love to come down here. So I volunteer my speaker to go out of town, you know, to my sponsor to go out of town to speak in different places. And he does the same thing for me. I was at a convention in Mexico a couple years ago, and they needed a speaker, and I was trying everything I could to get him to go speak down there, but it didn't work out. But he is here today, so you guys will definitely get a message. The thing about... I was speaking to our speaker that spoke in Fresno last night, a guy with 10 years, and he was kind of nervous. He'd only shared, I think, his story maybe once before, and I could tell that he had something to offer. You know, I really could. I had that feeling, that intrinsic feeling. And, you know, he did a great job, and, you know, it's not about how many we can reach. Is that if I can just reach one person in this room today by something I say or something that I don't say, if it's just a look, if I can look you in the eyes, like my friend Glenda right there. Glenda, I got you. Don't even worry. That's my new friend Glenda right there. She sat down. She was like, oh my gosh, these guys from Fresno. Man, I don't know. But you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life that I did not expect. Okay? So this is coming from a guy that couldn't stop drinking and couldn't stop using. Okay? The only thing that was left for me was jails, institutions, and death. And guess what? I got very comfortable in prison. Very comfortable. You know what I mean? And it's a funny thing today that, you know, I spend a lot of time in the Federal Bureau of Prisons and the California Department of Corrections, and, you know, my current sponsor is a retired correctional officer. It's great, man. I can't get him away from him. I can't get away from him as hard as I try. You know, and... But my life has taken an entirely different direction today, you know. And you know, I was reading to one of our members that's out right now, and she called me for advice. And the only advice I can give you is when I open up the book and read from it what it says. You know what I mean? And I had read something in To the Employers, and what it talks about To the Employers. And if you're not an employer, you would automatically think prior to investigation, well, I'm not an employer. Why should I read that chapter? I have no, that's nothing, or I don't have a job, or I don't want a job. You know what I mean? But it talks about you have to have a change of heart. That's the wording that it says, is you have to have a change of heart. You know what I mean? And the only thing that can change your heart is a power greater than yourself. And a two-way communication with that higher power. You know what I mean? It's a cultivation of spiritual experiences. You know, I thought I was special when I first got here back. Me and my sponsor started, he was 91, I was shortly after 92. I went back out for 10 years and I made it back. You know, so I thought that the spiritual experiences that I had, like, oh, that was a close one. Oh, God, you know. You know, I don't know if anybody can relate to that. Have, like, a really profound spiritual experience. Like, you really felt the presence of God or a power that you don't know about. And how much it changed you. Like, oh, my God, I should go back to meetings. I should get sober. I should get a sponsor. That shit lasts about 2 minutes. You know what I mean? Those spiritual experiences, they wane quickly. You know what I mean? You can't rely on a spiritual experience that you had, you know, a year ago to keep you sober today. It does not work. You know, the culmination of working the steps for me, I have found, it leads to an ever-evolving spiritual awakening. I did not plan to be in Springfield today. There's no part of me in my intellect, in my mind, in my planning, because I'm a planner, let me tell you that. I plan my work week out, my meetings, when my sponsees are coming. I got to have it planned out, you know what I mean? I'm still kind of impromptu and kind of, you know, off the cuff a little bit, kind of wild a little bit. I still go to bed, you know, early, but, you know, for me, the drastic change that has changed my life is that when I go to bed at night, sometimes that 10th step that I do at night, that quick review of my day, man, I haven't hurt nobody today. You know, and it's been a lot of days that I haven't hurt anybody. You know what I mean? Now, there's some days where my mouth overrides and, you know, I say something I shouldn't say and I don't owe an amends and maybe I hurt somebody's feelings. But I haven't intentionally went out of my way to hurt somebody today. Now today, what I do is I intentionally go out of my way, like to Springville, to help somebody. And I don't even know who that person is. And I may never see the person that I may have an impact on today. You know, and that's the beautiful thing about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter what you got, we're not concerned about it. What we're concerned about is your desire to stop drinking and or using, if that's your problem too. I mean, for me, I always felt I was more of an addict than I was an alcoholic. You know, because I was never a wino in the streets, or I never shook from not drinking. So, but the thing about it was, what makes me an alcoholic is I'm unpredictable after I take the first drink. I had a relapse in 1997 or 8, something like that. And I was going to meetings. I think I had a sponsor that I wasn't utilizing. I wasn't reading the book. I didn't have a service commitment. I didn't have sponsees. I just liked to showboat at meetings. I would go and, you know, listen or talk and laugh and, oh, yeah, you're sober, yeah. You know, and what happened is I drank. I drank on a New Year's Eve. And after I drank, I was like, well, it's New Year's Eve. I might as well just keep drinking now. You know, it's got, might as well tie one on. And I ended up picking up my cousin and two cases of beer, and we drove to San Francisco for New Year's Eve. And I hadn't drank in 3.5 years to the day. And I remember just downing those beers and tossing them just like I'd never stopped drinking before. And that day I probably drank, I don't know, 18 beers, you know, in a short time. I probably drank 10 by the time I got to San Francisco. And it was the same. Nothing had changed. That feeling was the same. And then I bought a bunch of crack cocaine. I don't know if there's any crack. It doesn't look like there's a bunch of crack cocaine smokers. But you never know. Oh, Peggy back there, I don't know if you're a crack cocaine smoker or not, man. You know, and I bought a bunch of crack cocaine from a guy. I don't even smoke crack cocaine, but when I drink, I'm unpredictable. I don't know what I'm going to do. It doesn't, you know, there's everything's off the table, you see. And see, today in Alcoholics Anonymous, everything is on the table. My table is bountiful today. You know what I mean? And I'm not bragging. It's the miracle that has happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a miracle happening here every minute. They say don't leave until the miracle happens. Well, if you're here, right now, today, it's a miracle. The miracle has already happened. We got a 10-minute break. See you. All right. Once again, my name is Michael L. I am an alcoholic. Hope you guys enjoyed that old, long, drawn-out 10-minute share. So I get to hear my sponsor speak quite often, and whenever I do, it always touches my heart. So without further ado, we have Jeff L. from Fresno with 28 years of sobriety. He'll be coming up to speak.
My name is Jeff. I'm an alcoholic. Thankful and grateful to be here, and just want to thank you guys for having us come out and share experience, strength, and hope with you. You know, the times, before I got sober, I was wondering why alcohol, that liquid, always kicked my ass, and I never had an answer to that problem. Because all my life, I was always in the problem and never in the solution. You know, my sobriety date is November 15th. Of 1991, and for that I'm truly grateful. Grateful for the VA hospital. At that time, they had an inpatient program at the VA hospital, and that's where I did my surrender that got me where I'm at today. Just continue to surrender. Because I've learned here, the strong don't survive here, the powerless do. I'm powerless over people, places, things, situations. And they told me always do the opposite. You want to say no, you say yes. When you want to say yes, you say yes to Alcoholics Anonymous. You never turn down anything. Anybody asks you to do something in Alcoholics Anonymous, you do it, as long as it's not hurting another human being. You know, my story's a little bit different than Michael's. I got a text from him telling me that AA called and they need us, so I knew I was in for something. You know, and that's what we do with each other, man. We participate in our own recovery. And what I've learned here, you know, in that VA hospital, if I got more time than you, it's just because I found it before you did. I surrendered before you did, and I'm a little older than some of you. And if you got more time than me, I thank you. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love the old timers. Because when I got here, I hated the old timers. And that was my problem when I got here, man. I hated everybody. I'd walk into the room, I'd scan the room like I did earlier today when I first got here, and I'd tell you something bad about every one of you without ever saying a word to you, man. And because of the changes of Alcoholics Anonymous in my soul, I could scan the room and tell you something good about yourself, man. Or say a little prayer for you depending on your body language and how you're doing today, man. You know, when I was drinking and using, I had a lot of ups and downs on the way down. And now that I quit drinking and using, I got a lot of ups and downs on the way up. You know, I got here on a court card back in 91 with back-to-back-to-back DUI, suspended license, and history of alcohol, substance abuse, womanizing, lying, thieving, cheating, gambling. It all came with me, man. I was the last one to find out or admit that I was an alcoholic, like I was the last one to find out the things I did the night before because I'm a blackout drinker. It's been many years since I got that phone call saying, hey, you remember what you said to my wife last night? Or you remember what you said to embarrass the family one more time? And swearing that I'd never drink again. And by about 2 o'clock that afternoon, that stinking thinking starts kicking in. Telling me maybe just one. Just maybe one drink today, man. That's all I need. One's too many and 1,000's not enough, I've heard here, man. And we give it away to keep it, and we hurt in order to grow. You know? So I got here in that court card, and you know, I got sober at the ODAC Club in Fresno. It was on 1st and Tulare. And I was in there with the best liars, thieves, cheats, prostitutes, gangsters. They were all in there, man. And back then, there was smoking allowed. In the ODAC club, you'd walk in the ODAC club, and they would put the non-smoking three seats up in the front by the window. And it was a cloud. You'd open up that door, and a cloud of smoke. Nicotine would be on the walls. That's how bad it was. And if you didn't smoke, you smelled like smoke when you left there. And they told me, listen for the message, man. Look for the similarities instead of the differences. Because all my life, I look for the differences in people, man. Never the similarities. Because that way, when you're different from me, I win. In my magic, magnify mine, you know. So I was there just getting my core card signed. And I would chuckle what people would say, you know. And then there'd be this one guy that'd come in. He would be in a suit and tie, out of place. He was the most obnoxious individual I've ever heard in my life. And he would cuss at you and tell you things. And he'd walk in the door and I'd think, man, not this asshole again. And that asshole became my first sponsor. Because see, what had happened was I had my DUI cases coming up. And I found out that they were the biggest defense attorneys for DUI drivers in the state of California. So my mind is, I'm going to need him sooner or later. But I don't need him right now. Because I already found what I was going to do in AA. I was going to be that person that came in every 2 weeks and told you I just drank again and pick up another chip, man. And you know, I walked up to Rotten Ron. That was his name, Rotten Ron. And Rotten Ron didn't give a shit about my feelings, didn't care what I thought. And he would step on my toes and he would tell me, you don't want to be here, get the F out of here and go have a drink and shut the F up. When you're ready, come on back in. All of a sudden, he hurt my feelings, because now I got feelings all of a sudden, you know. And so he put his phone, I asked him for his phone number. He wrote down the phone number and threw it at me, and he goes, this is the quickest way to get rid of you. You'll never call me. Well, you know, I started calling him one day at a time. He became my sponsor. He didn't suggest too many things, but he would say some things like shit to me sometimes. He'd say, no, the only time you miss a meeting, Jeff, is if you die on the way to one. And I'd chuckle and think, man, this dude's crazy, man. You find a good enough excuse to go out and have a drink, you give me a call first. If it's good enough for both of us, we'll both go out and have a drink. But if it was, he'd have to call his sponsor. And I haven't found that excuse yet. Because I can never ever tell you I'll never drink again. I'm one of those guys that tell you I can never ever tell you that. But what I've learned here, one day at a time, you know, 1 minute at a time, one heartbeat at a time, one cuss word at a time, one teardrop at a time. We just don't drink no matter what. And unfortunately, Rotten Ron, year four of my sobriety, I was at his daughter's wedding, and him and a couple other guys, two of them that are still around, claim their time, were over there drinking O'Doul's. And I'd asked him about drinking O'Doul's when I got here. He told me you might as well just go have a drink. Just set yourself up. And I've learned you're already drunk before you take that first drink. You've already told that lie before you tell that lie. You know, a lot of teachings here in AA that I never knew about, man. Because I'm the type of man that look you straight in the face and never hear a word you're saying. I knew everything. You couldn't tell me nothing. You couldn't tell me anything about surrenders. You couldn't tell me anything. You know, because I had it all up here. And he chose to go out and drink, and he came back in 10 years later. In a wheelchair, and I greeted him at the door like he would have greeted me, and I said, better you than me. And he just shook his head, because that's what he taught me. You go out and have a drink, better you than me, Jeff. I go out and have a drink, better me than you. And that's how Alcoholics Anonymous works here sometimes, man. The tough love. I come from the tough love. I come from either you do or you don't. There's no gray area in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for me. But you know what? The minute we step out the door, there's a lot of gray area. A lot of gray area. Talk to you about anything. But in here, you know, they used to say things like, you know, if a cancer patient had to come to one meeting a day for an hour a day to be in remission, I guarantee you these rooms would be packed. And what I see today, a lot of people on their cell phones, and they got all this shit going, outside issues going on. And I suggest to my people to stay off the phones during the meetings. It's a sign of disrespect. But that's just me. I just make the suggestions. They can do what they want with it. But sooner or later, you know, we'll have a conversation about it. But I got in the doors, you know, of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1991. I had all these problems. I had financial, emotional, mental, I had relationships with women. It was just one after another. If I wasn't calling them a bitch 20 times a week, and they weren't calling me a bastard 20 times a week and trying to run me over to Chico's parking lot, then we didn't love each other, man. That was love when I got here, you know. And all my life, I always looked for a woman to make me happy. And what I've learned here is you need to find a happy woman, you know. So I got here in AA, and a man at my time that became my second sponsor, you know, he called me one day, and he says, "You know what, Jeff, you got a best friend?" I said, "Yep." He said, "Would you do anything for your best friend?" I said, "Yep." He said, "Would you die for your best friend?" Back then, "Yeah, I'd die for my best friend, you know, all this bullshit. You know, would you do this for your best friend? Would you lie for him?" "Yep." Because why don't you become your own best friend? Why don't you get sober? And these things these people told me years ago left an imprint on me today that allows me to stay sober one day at a time. It's just one alcoholic helping another. You know, so I was going to the ODAC club and picking up my chips, and people would tell me, "Hey, we seen Daddy in your face last night after the meeting," and they'd laugh, and I'd say, "Well, Daddy's helping me stay sober." You know, and a few other fine choices. Because when I got here, when I finally started participating in my own recovery, because they'd call on me and I'd say, "No, thank you, not today." And one day I said that, and Ron walked up behind me in my ear and whispered in. He goes, "I guarantee you, if that was a drink or a crack pipe, you wouldn't be saying no thank you. So I suggest you start participating in your own recovery." Ron had a way of talking to me. He had a way of talking to people, man. And I did what he suggested. One day at a time. We just don't drink and use no matter what, you know. So I remember being at the ODAC club, and fist fights would break out during the middle of the meeting. And, you know, I thought this was the greatest thing in the world, man. It's like being in a bar, man. Shit would be happening, smoking, people cussing each other out, saying things. And the old timers that were talking about recovery, I never heard of them, man. But it seeped into my head a little bit, man. You know, when I got into the VA hospital, and one day we went in the group, and, you know, I was the ombudsman, and they said, they asked me about myself, and I told them, you know, this and that, and the counselor said, "You know what, Jeff, you're like the baboon in the zoo. You'll stretch your shit back and forth, and when people get close enough to you, you'll pick up that pile of shit and throw it in the face." And I didn't understand that. He's talking about my personality. I didn't appreciate it, you know. And so they told me what I needed. I didn't need tough love anymore. I just needed love. So they all stood up and gave me a hug. I broke down crying. They took me in front of my group, and they made everybody in my group give me a hug. I didn't know how to take that. So I'm a side hugger. You know, I didn't know about this hugging stuff. When I see man hugging man, I came in, I was a different type of man. You know, and I got here with a lot of notions of how life should be and how life should have been. And, you know, I told myself I'd be a millionaire by the age of 26. And I was 26 for about 4 or 5 years because I never made it there, man. I lied about everything, man. Who I was with, where I was at, how much I had, how much I didn't have. Everything was a lie. And I couldn't understand why people didn't trust me. And the oxymoron here, when I got here, if you didn't use alcohol or drugs when I got here, I didn't trust you, man. And all that has changed, man, because the only thing that changes is everything. You know, and I got out of the VA hospital, and I had about a week out, and they called me and they asked me to speak. So I called Ron. I said, "Hey, guess what? They asked me to speak at the VA hospital. I'm going to speak next Friday, blah, blah, blah." And he stayed silent on the phone, let me talk. And he says, "You're not speaking." You go, "What?" He goes, "You're not speaking. You don't have anything that those people want. And if you go speak, you get another sponsor." He hung up on me, and I thought, what a jealous son of a bitch, man. You know? And you know what? He was right. I had nothing to give away but anger, pain, and the ego, and pride, and all that shit, man. And I got out of VA, and he said, "What are you going to do tomorrow?" I said, "As soon as I get out, I'll be at a new meeting." These old timers talk about meetings, meetings, meetings. You know, it's like the newcomer comes in, and he gets a sponsor, and he asks the sponsor, "How many meetings you need a week?" He says, "Just one." He says, "Why do I see you in a meeting every day then?" He says, "I just don't know which one I'm going to need, man." And that's worked out countless times in my life, man. When I don't want to go to meetings, my ass better be in a meeting. When I want to be in a meeting, I better be in a meeting. You know, and in our group and the people that I run with, is we never say no, you know. Coming out of the VA hospital, I didn't really have a lot going for me. I had repossessed cars, burning cars, because I couldn't pay my car payment, couldn't pay my PG&E, telephone. You know, I'm the type of man that at 4 o'clock every afternoon at that time, I'd walk over to the 7-Eleven in this apartment that I lived in. I'd buy a bag of Cheetos and a Big O and get in front of my TV. I'd argue with Oprah Winfrey, Phil Donahue, the 6 o'clock news. It's like I was having a conversation with them, man. And I'd be right all the time. I lived in that apartment, man, you know, and I could never go out and get my mail. I was in fear of getting my mail. So I had a few drinks. I'd have a few drinks once a month. And I'd walk out to that mailbox, that little mailbox. It'd be stuffed with shit. And I'd pick up all that shit. And I'd walk right over to the Dipsy dumpster. And I'd toss it in the Dipsy dumpster, man. Mailman would leave notes, are you dead? And he'd leave mail on my door. I just couldn't get my mail, man. I was in fear of a lot of things, man. I was in fear to answer my door. I was in fear of sleeping in my room. I was paranoid. The alcohol was taking over my mind, man. I was in this illusion of reality about how life should be. Past sorrows and better tomorrows. Today's just too painful to look at. So I'm going to have a drink today, man. I'm going to quit tomorrow. I'll quit cheating on my next girlfriend. I'll be a better employee at the next job, man. Everything was always tomorrow, next week. Give me another chance. I swear I'll never do it again, you know. So, you know, my first job in AA was cleaning toilets, man. And I cleaned the best damn toilet in Fresno, you know. And all I knew was Ron told me to go to meetings, meetings, meetings. And I was on Social Security disability when I got here. You know, I'd gone on, I went head on with the semi about 2 years before I got here. And it took me about an hour and a half to cut me out of the car. And there's three of us in the car. And I took my whole side took the impact. And I was pretty banged up. And I remember the first CHP gets there and he goes, "We got one possible fatality." And I'm thinking, shit, the truck driver died. And they were talking about me because I was in and out of conscience. And all of a sudden they put a blanket over me and I'm yelling at them, I'm alive. And they go, "No, we got to cut you out of the car if it catches on fire." If I could have just reached out, I could have touched the battery. That's how much everything was around me, man. And by God's grace, you know, I escaped death one more time. But, you know, 4 months later, I'm in my wheelchair at Club Paradise, Chiquitos, popping pain pills, snorting cocaine, drinking, having the time of my life, man. Thought everything was okay. I was lying on the outside, and I was dying on the inside, man. I knew nothing about feelings and emotions. I learned here, shit's not a feeling. I remember telling Ron one time, you know, he asked me how I'm feeling today, and I said, "You wouldn't understand." He says, "I understand, you're just full of shit." You know, he would talk to me in ways like that than I needed to be talked to. I needed that tough love because everything else, I'm a liar, thief, and a cheat, and I'm a manipulator, man. So, you know, I was on the Social Security disability, and I get this letter saying, you know, you got to show up for this this doctor's appointment. And because I thought I was going to be on Social Security disability, because in my mind, I get this check, this is going for my alcohol and drugs, and this will go to pay my bills. Well, that would go for that, and then all of a sudden I'd take the money that was for my bills, and I'd use it for my alcohol. And I had a sister that's a missionary, and she left her checkbook in my one brother's drawers. So I thought, I own that checkbook. So I started writing bad checks. That's where my mind took me. It's her fault for doing that. So one day we get a call. They're stuck. They can't come home because they have no money in their checking account. Because I chose to do the things that I did. That's the type of alcoholic that I am. But I'm not like that. I'm different. So, you know, I started, you know, staying sober, making coffee, doing the things these old timers told me to do, picking up cigarette butts at the time, washing tables, doing whatever they told me to do. I did it. All I know is I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to get drunk. You know, and So I went to this Social Security disability hearing, and they said, you'll find out in 3 months. I got a letter saying, in 3 months, you're done. You can go back to work. So I asked Ron, you know, what am I going to do? And he said, there's a school right down the street. So I went and started getting education. And the next thing you know, I became student body president at Fresno City College. And then I started a program called The Choice. It was a gang violence substance abuse prevention program. I took it from volunteer to sole proprietorship, and we took it into a nonprofit organization. So year four, you know, I applied for this internship, and year four, I was at the White House. I worked out of the White House under President Clinton, under the Clinton campaign. I worked out of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, which at that time advised Clinton on illicit drug use. So, you know, for a man like me, for a story like that to start to come true, I'd have never dreamed of that in my entire life. That was never one of my fantasies to be there. So I get there, you know, and my first day there, the Secret Service comes down, and I still had that thinking that, you know what, they're going to catch something from my past, and they're going to send me home. So they come through the glass doors and the glass window. They sit me down. They give me this pass, and I had a pass go anywhere in the White House I wanted to, except for certain areas. Obviously, you know, the Rose Garden and the Oval Office. I couldn't just walk in there like I owned it, but in my mind, I thought I could, you know. And Secret Service says, don't lose this badge. You lose this badge, you're going home. So noon came around. I looked up some meetings, and there's a meeting called, and down the road about 3 or 4 miles, it's called DuPont Circle. So I went to this meeting. So I'm at the meeting. The seventh tradition comes around, taking my lunch. I start looking for my wallet. And when I left, they tell you to put your ID away. So I stuck it in my wallet. And so I said, maybe I threw it in the trash. I started digging through the trash, couldn't find it. So I started getting frustrated, halt, hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. And I can't find my wallet. So I walk out on the street. And I'm thinking, there's the cab company, the sad cab companies. And, you know, D.C. has probably 30, 40 different cab companies. So I'm all confused, man. I'm bent out of shape. I got to walk back to, you know, the White House. So I walk up into the building that I'm in, and the guy's there at the window. And he gives me the head nod. You know, I give him the head nod back, and I said, I lost my badge. And he kind of looks at me. He calls. Secret Service comes down. Secret Service goes, tell him. I said, you know, I lost my badge. And the guy looks at me and he goes, you know you're going home, right? I said, yeah. He says, just kidding, come on in. Came in, gave me a new badge. About 4 o'clock that afternoon, before cell phones, pagers, I get a phone call from my mom, and she's like, Jeffrey, did you lose your wallet today? I'm like, yeah. She says, well, the cab driver called, found your wallet. He said, your wallet was sitting in the back seat. He'd been driving cabs for over 20 years. He's never seen nothing like it. Two fares got in after you, and they didn't touch your wallet. And he's got your wallet. He wants to give it back to you. And see, that was God letting me know I'm doing the right things. God's working in my life, doing things for me that I couldn't do for myself. You know? So I got to, you know, I spent some time there. I got to see a lot of different things. You know, I was at a meeting every day, and they have shotgun meetings where they meet differently. And, you know, when I first got here, when I first started participating in my own recovery, I had a very foul mouth. And every other word was F you could suck this, and I hate you people, because Ron told me, go in there and tell them how you feel today. And that's how I felt. And some people ask me to keep coming back to the meetings, and some ask me to never come back to the meetings, man. And I didn't understand that. You know, I walk in the meeting and say some stuff like, some of us wipe up, some wipe down, some don't wipe at all. You know, and I was just saying things, just crazy things, man, because my mind was out there. You know, it may have made sense, but it wasn't the right platform to be using things like that. And I had to learn how to change things, right? So I'm there in D.C., and this lady pulls me to the side. She says, you know, we really enjoy you coming to our meetings, because we've never heard anybody talk like you, but we were wondering if you could learn not to cuss so much. So I had to start changing more and more, man. I can't rest on my laurels here, man. I got to continue to do that self-inventory and take a look at myself instead of looking at others, man. It's not what I can take out of the meetings, it's what I can put into it, man. I remember early sobriety, everything's working well, everything's great, things are going well. I walk into a meeting, I leave the Lana Club of Fresno, I want to get drunk, man. I didn't understand it. The very highs and the very lows, the roller coaster ride of Alcoholics Anonymous, of getting sober one day at a time, man. So, you know, I came back home, you know, and I got this job that I always wanted. And they sent me to school for 8 weeks. And on the last day there, they said, tomorrow we want you to come in and talk about the most life significant change, the significant, most significant change in your life, what got you here. So at that time, you know, I was Mr. AA. I should have written books. I should have been on the circuit. Everybody should ask me to sponsor them, newcomers, old timers. I knew all this shit, right? And the next day I walked in and I was the last one they called upon. So I got up there and I turned it into a speaker meeting. And they were silent. And about 2 weeks later, I'm doing my job and this guy walks up to me and he hands me this envelope. It's a pink slip telling me they no longer leave my services. And what I learned that day, I learned about anonymity. About my own anonymity. And respecting others' anonymity. Because I'd see people out and say, hey, don't I know you from the ODAC Club? Or don't you go to AA? And what I've learned is, you know, aren't you a friend of Bill's? And maybe in a silent way, away from people, man. You know, so, you know, also when I got here, I didn't have a license because of my DUIs, and I had to ride a bike, you know, for about 2.5 years. I rode everywhere in Fresno, man. You know, so I came home, and the choice, we dissolved it, and we all went our ways. I got into the field of sales. You know, I'm 39 years old. I had my first kid. I was with this woman for about 4 years, and we broke up, and over a booty call, a couple months later, all of a sudden she's pregnant. I was doing business up in Sacramento, and I get this phone call in my hotel, and she says, I'm pregnant, with or without you, I'm having this kid. I said the wrong thing. I said, it's going to be with me, but we'll never get back together. And boy, did I get baptized, the child support, child everything, this and that, the roller coaster ride, the shit that I did, you know. And I put myself in that position. But I got a 19-year-old kid that's never seen me drink. A 19-year-old kid that'll come in here and tell you my bark's worse than my bite, that I'm just a big old marshmallow, and that he loves me. And that's what I want, because I come from a military family. I was in the military. And I came up with physical, mental violence that today people would be going to prison over if they did to the kids. And I didn't have to do that. I stemmed the tide with my kid, man. I've learned how to love because of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I love you people. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, man. And because of people like you and last names I'll never know, I've learned how to stay sober, man. I said I'd never ever cry in a meeting. I've cried in meetings. Out of pain. Out of just being grateful and thankful that I got one more day of sobriety, man. My biggest reward in Alcoholics Anonymous is another day of being sober, man. So, you know, I'm stumbling along through my recovery, you know, and, you know, I have this child, and, you know, I didn't know what to do, man. I'm 39 years old. All of a sudden, I got this kid, and, you know, I'm going through the courts like a lot of us do at times. And I had to really start working the program in a different manner, man. I had to pray for forgiveness before I got into acceptance, man. I had to do these things these people told me about working, reading the 11-step prayer, getting on my hands and knees, being thankful for what I have instead of ungrateful for what I don't have, man. You know, I wasn't planning on staying here. I was here to make that guest appearance one more time, like I did in everybody's lives and the things that I started out. I'm a great starter, but a terrible finisher, man. I'll beat you in the sprint, but you got me in the quarter mile and further on. You know, so Rod and Ron, you know, I obviously after he drank, I had to get another sponsor. You know, and I got another sponsor immediately, and his name's Paul D. And I'd call Paul, and he was a little more civilized than Ron, but he still had ways of saying things to me. I'd call him up and I'd start ranting and raving. He'd say, "Jeff, you been to a meeting today yet?" And I'd say, "Nope." And he'd hang the phone up on me. So what he was telling me is to get my ass in the meeting. Get into the solution. Because we know what the problem is. The problem is me, man. When's all the controversy in my life going to stop? Is when I stop it, man. He used to be a guy at our AA meetings in Fresno at the Lana Club. He'd say, "Just because somebody throws the ball to you doesn't mean you got to catch it." And I never knew what that meant for a long time. Just because someone says something rude to me or does something to me doesn't mean I got to retaliate. Because in my mind, it's about retaliation. The growth in AA, the changes that have to come. The only thing that changes is everything. You know, and I had a lot of good things happen to me, man. I had a lot of good things in the beginning. I've had my share of heartaches. You know, 5 years ago, my sister committed suicide. And she wasn't an alcoholic. She committed suicide, and I found her body. And it splintered a family that was put back together because of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got here, my family never said we loved each other. And because of AA and my first sponsor telling me he loved me every day, I started telling my family I loved them. And the first time I told each one of them I loved them, the phone was silent. Or they would look at me with that head back like, "What'd you just say?" And I'd tell them I loved them. My brother was he's always in the gym, and he'd be at Gold's Gym. I'd be riding my 10-speed. So one day I decided to get off my bike and go in there and tell him how thankful I was for him, and I loved him. And I walked into that gym, and he's over there with all his buffed out boys, and I walk right up to him, and he looks at me, and I look at him, and he says, what are you doing here? I said, "I just came to tell you I love you." And he's looking at me, and I gave him a hug, and everybody, all these five dudes are sitting there, they're all like looking like, "What the hell is this going on?" And I walked out, man. Now everybody in my family tells each other we love each other because of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. Alcoholics Anonymous works in every aspect of my life, man. Through the good, through the bad, through the indifferent. You know, I come to AA, you know, and there's been some slight changes. AA's been around for what, 85, 86 years, man. There's been some slight changes. You know, I sponsor five guys. They're the most arrogant, egotistic, defiant individuals that I know, except for Michael L. He's a sweetheart, but you know. And these guys remind me of myself, man. I've learned more from the people that I sponsor than I've learned from my sponsor, because they show me exactly where I used to be at, and where I've come from, and where I could be if I take another drink of alcohol ever again, man. And like I said, I can never ever tell you I'll never drink again. I'm in recovery. Some people are recovered. I'm not. I'm in recovery. I work this thing one day at a time. If you're recovered, my hat's off to you. There's no harsh thing, but at one time I hated you. You said you recovered, man, I wanted to fight you. You know, I didn't like you. There's things people said that I didn't like in meetings, and sometimes I'm the one saying it. You know, the alcoholic that still suffers is sometimes is the man that's standing here speaking today, man. There's times I suffer in AA, man. There's sometimes I don't have all the answers. I remember one time about 4 years ago, I called Michael L. for a suggestion. So he went and shared the morning maintenance. So I got a call from five old timers. "Did you ask Michael L. for a suggestion?" I said, "Yeah, because I don't know it all. He's got enough time. I trust in him like he trusts in me." And that's how it works here, man. One alcoholic helping another. Just don't drink today, man. You know, so, you know, I've been sober for a little while, you know, and I got to continue to surrender just like everybody in this room. I got to continue to get on my hands and knees. I got to continue to look at what's right today instead of what's wrong today. Because I get into these me conversations. And a guy in my home group, Tomas, says, if you're in a room by yourself, you're outnumbered, man. And some days I'm outnumbered, right? So I got this me conversation. I got all my answers, man. I know more than you do. You know, I get focused on that. So, you know, I come to meetings on a regular basis because that's what was taught to me, what was suggested to me, and was pretty much told to me, you know. And, you know, Paul D, you know, he's a big influence in my life. And I remember there was a lot of people going out at a certain time in my recovery, going out and having drinks, relapsing, coming back in, saying relapse is part of recovery. No, it's not. Not part of recovery. It's part of myself. We'll run riot one more time. I'm different. It's not going to be like that this time. And I was complaining to Paul, and we're eating lunch, breakfast, and he's eating his breakfast, and he's looking at me, and all the sponsors give me that look, and you know some shit's about to come out of their mouth. And he says, let me tell you something, Jeff. He goes, those people relapsing over alcohol and drugs? I said, yeah. He goes, that's like you relapsing over women. I didn't like that, you know, but he was right. See, I come in here with a lot of bad habits, man. And AA has a solution. Either I'm in the solution or I'm in the problem, man. When I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was always in the problem. I didn't know anything about solutions, man. I just knew about self, will run riot, how things should be, how things in this picture-perfect world, you know. And today, you know, I've become neutral in a lot of things. As I get some time here, man. I become neutral in what people are going through, and I have empathy for them. And I have love and care and understanding for them. Outside these rooms. Inside these rooms. You know, I'm a little bit different. Because it's not what I say and do in here. It's what I say and do out there. I've learned, you know, in early sobriety, Jeff, you come in here and talk about recovery, we'll bring your family in and let them talk about what's really going on. And I guarantee you it'd be two different stories. So I paid the price of admission to get here. And what I've learned here and what I know, it's easier staying here and staying sober than going back out and trying to get sober again, man. The easy part's getting here. The hard part's staying here. Being flooded with all these emotions and feelings and not knowing, not understanding. Should I have a drink? Shouldn't I have a drink? Today's a good day to have a drink. It's not a good day to have a drink. F them. I don't want to go to that meeting because that bitch is going to be there. That dude's going to say the same shit over and over. I know their story. I've only been here 3 weeks. F them. And it's all, you know, and I'm dazed and confused, man. But I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to get drunk.
Yeah.
So I've learned to sit silently sometimes and sit back and remember when I get that way. Because if I spot it, I got it, right? That old saying that comes back, these old timers will throw at me at times, man. So I need a sponsor still. My sponsor currently today is 45 years. I don't like him right now. You know, I love him, but I don't like him for some of this little incident. But you know what? I guess I got to get over it, right? You know, I got to practice these principles in all my affairs. But see, this guy, he's a little different. He's an old biker. And, you know, he'll come up and he'll call me little devil. Oh, you little devil. It's going to be okay. I'm used to harshness, man. So the longer I stay here, the softer I become. And the softer I become, the better parent I become, the better member of Alcoholics Anonymous I become, the better human being I become. Because like I said, when I'm in a room by myself, I'm outnumbered and that me conversation starts up. You know, I got here holding on to a relationship that was over 8 years before I got here. But I was still holding on. One day she'll come back. One day it's going to be different. And I used to drive by her house, and there'd be another dude there, and I'd get pissed off, and all of a sudden the fire truck would drive by. And what that fire truck told me was, you should throw a mock cocktail through their window. the illusion of reality, that thinking that gets really way out there. It's the things that I have to come in here and share about that I don't really want to share about that's going to get me drunk, man. It's not the things I can come in here and easily talk about. It's not talking about the same old shit every day, every week, saying the same old story, changing it. Either I grow or I go. And lately, like I said, I've been learning how to become neutral, man. When I got here, I was the one setting the fire, adding more fuel to it, doing the gossiping, acting like a tough guy, not saying hi to people, mad dogging. And AA's changed all that, man. AA's given me a peace that I never knew of, man. It's given me understanding of other people that I never cared to know, man. It's given me the ability to tell somebody I love them and really mean that I love them, man. And they used to say, you know, all the money in the world can't keep you sober, but it sure can get you drunk, man. And I never met anybody too dumb to get this program. But I met a lot of people too smart to get this program. And that was me when I walked in here. I was too smart. But thank God, you know, AA, God, people, and Alcoholics Anonymous came together and surrounded me. And what I've learned here is I didn't get here a minute too soon or a minute too late. I got here right on time, you know, and I got here on God's time. As I got some years. It took about 20 years before I started identifying that. My surrenders. Came in here with my daily companions were self-pity and self-doubt. I wanted everybody to forgive me, you know. So I'm working the steps with Ron, and we're on step 9. And my first amends was to a gentleman at a car repair shop. So he tells me to go make my amends, and I walk in this car repair shop. I go in and introduce myself, and it's a very tiny little tin office. They got the bays outside, real busy. And I walk in and say, you know, my name's such and such. I owe you some money. And the lady's looking at me, and she gets on the computer, and she goes, are you sure you owe us money? And I said, yeah. So I started telling her the story. I said, you know, Mr. such and such sent me in here to get my car repaired. Your husband told me to take it for a test drive. Well, I took it for a test drive. 7 years later, I'm back. Her face turned bright red. She picks that phone up. She says, Ron, can you come in here, please? And all of a sudden, Ron comes walking in. And Ron, at that time, is probably about 50, 6'4". And she says, do you recognize this young man right here? And he's like, no. She goes, why don't you tell him the story? And at that time, man, you know, I'm looking at this guy, and I'm looking at the door, and I'm thinking, shit, how do I get out of this, right? So I tell him, you know, my name's such and such. Mr. such and such sent me in here. You told me to take my... And he starts shaking his head. Even before I get down to the story, he starts shaking his head. His face is bright red. The four ladies in the office, they're quiet. They're all looking at me. And it's probably 10 seconds he thought... I thought it was 20 minutes, and he's looking at me, and he reaches out his hand, and he says, I've been in business for over 30 years, and I've never, ever had anybody come in here and do this. And I'll tell you what, you stay sober, we'll call it even. Aww. And I'm looking at him, you know, and I'm, you know, because I'm new, and I want to tell you everything bad about me. You know, I want to tell you what a piece of shit I am. Because you paid me a compliment, you just fucked my whole day up. You know, you tell me I'm a piece of shit, I love you, right? So I'm trying to think, what can I tell this dude? I said, you know, no, sir, I'll clean your bays. I don't have any money. I mean, I'll clean your bays. I'll wash your cars. And he goes, no, you don't understand. We're even. I appreciate you coming in here. He walked around and gave me a hug. But the catch is, if I ever need you, we're going to be calling on you. Okay? So one day I'm in this restaurant, and this guy, you know, he's Mr. Popular, and he's got a group of his people over there, and I come walking in. Hey, Mr. Such and Such. Oh, Jeff, come over here. Tell him a story about us, man. Tell us a story, you know? So I had to be reminded of the things that I did, right? You know, because I wanted to leave that behind. And it's good sometimes for me to get fertilizer thrown at me. Someone says something, oh, at 28 years, I don't want anything you got. Okay? Well, go fuck yourself. And I use that as fertilizer. You know? I use that as fertilizer to grow, and I use that with the people that I sponsor when shit's not going right in their life. I'm not always right, but I'm not always wrong. I'm not the smartest man in this room, but I'm not the dumbest either. We're alcoholics, man. What I've learned here is to rely on you people. I remember in my early sobriety, man, I went down the phone list. That's another thing. You know, this phone list shit that people write, give to all these newcomers, I don't sign them. I don't believe in that. I believe I need to get my ass up and walk over to somebody and ask them for their phone number and put it in my phone or write it down, man. And I know everybody's got their own opinions, but that's just where I come from. And I know that's what works. So I have to get up, participate in my own recovery, man, and get the phone number so I know where to call. But I was having an emotional day, man, just one of really highs and down to the low, man. I'm going to drink, I'm not going to drink. I went through my whole phone list. Nobody answered. So my two buddies that persuaded me to come and get recovery, or that told me our friendship was over, said, hey, we'll come spend the night, whatever it is, but that didn't work. And then my second sponsor, before he was my second sponsor, finally called me. And just to hear another alcoholic's voice at that particular time just simmered everything down, man. And just let me know that everything's going to be okay. Just like that taxi cab driver. And when I met that taxi cab driver, he still had the $500 in there. I'm a starving student. And I said, sir, you can keep the money. He said, I don't want your money. I just want you to have your wallet back, man. Good things happen to good people that are doing the right things. And sometimes we get on that road of happy destiny. We're doing the right things. And then all of a sudden one day I wake up and I'm trudging it. Any dry drunk's better than any wet drunk, I've heard here, man. And I've been on a few dry drunks. I've been a bleeding deacon in AA. I've been the AA police. I try to turn this shit into Jeff Anonymous, you know, in my head, in my actions, and how things should be ran. I should be called on every meeting because don't you know who I am? No, you shouldn't be. With the time that I got, by the grace of God, it's good for me not to be sharing at meetings. But you know, when the third or fourth meeting comes in, that stinking thinking comes in, Tom, don't you know who the fuck I am? I deserve this. I got an eye problem. It's a weed problem in here, man. It's one alcoholic helping another just not to drink today, man. And I believe in AA, and I believe in the people in AA. And I believe things happen. You know, Michael was talking about, don't quit before the miracle happens, because the miracle's happening right now. It may not be happening on your time, and the miracle is not becoming what you want. You know, I used to ask God to give me patience and tolerance when I first got here, and then He'd put somebody across from me, just like me, man. And now I've learned just to pray for people, man, and to be grateful and thankful, no matter what's going on. To look at what's good today instead of what's bad. To get into the solution instead of the problem. The higher the expectations, the lower the serenity. So all the answers are in that blue book right there that we got. They're there for me. It talks about the alcoholic. You know, the alcoholic, more than most people, have two different personalities. It talks about the stage personality. The one that I want to come in and show you who I think that I am. And the one that the family knows, or the people that I work with knows, or my neighbor knows. Are they matching up, Jeff? If they're not, I better start making them match up. I have to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous that walks what I talk, man. Because I talk a lot of shit sometimes. And some of it's good and some of it's bad. Because there's sometimes I'm just having a very frustrating day in prayer, meditation, forgiveness, all that doesn't work. So I need to come in a meeting and talk about it. And I come and talk about it. And I tell them I'm in the funk. Woody, you know, he's an old biker, Hell's Angel. He got sober in Visalia. You know, his arms were bigger than my damn legs put together. And, you know, Woody taught me a lot, man. This man is man that had a voice where NA would be on the other side of the wall and they'd come over and they'd want whoever's talking so loud to shut up and they'd look at Woody and they'd turn right back around and go sit down, man. Woody had this powerful voice, man. And Woody would talk about being temporarily out of order. Like that old Coke machine, the sign on it back in the day for us that remember it, temporarily out of order. He also helped push me through my four step, man. I was stuck in that four step. I was just being lazy. I was stuck. And Woody came in one day and he's just talking and he says, you know, doing a proper four step, you know, or doing an improper four steps like going home and cleaning your room up, and you take all that dust and all that shit you just put on the floor and all them clothes that were in the corner and you sweep them underneath your bed. Everybody walks by your room and says, you know what? That room looks good, looks good. But inside you know that underneath that bed is a bunch of shit. So I was dumb enough to go home and clean out underneath my bed. And it made me feel good. You know? It made me feel okay. And it helped get me to the next level of going to the four step. Things that people say here that have nothing to do with what I'm going through. That have helped me numerous times, that have saved my ass, man. I always wanted more. I deserve more. I know more than you do. AA's taking all that away, man. It's like we're driving here. Michael L's giving directions. I just followed him. We had the newcomer in the back. Every time she said something, we agreed with her because she's a newcomer. She knows more than we do. You know? That's how the shit rolls here, man. You know? I have to be negotiable. Nothing was negotiable when I got here, man. There was never any solution to the problems that I had. My problems are always bigger than yours. Woe is me, the sky's falling. You didn't tell me good morning. You hurt my feelings. You didn't do certain things. You know, I can't control people, places, things, or situations. Like I said earlier, the strong don't survive here, man. The powerless do. I'm powerless over people, places, things, and situations. AA's taught me to love no matter what. Become that person of neutral. Let the newcomers and the people that got 20 years go at it. I can just sit back and watch it. I don't got to participate anymore. I know my son loves me because of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's not a doubt in my mind that kid loves me. I've never laid a hand on that kid yet because I raised him differently. And I say yet. There's been some times I wanted to goddamn put my hands on him, but I didn't do it. And I'm thankful for that, man, because of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's taught me to look at the whole picture, man. When I got here, I just focused in on what was good for me today. You know, and Michael had said something, you know, about my some things about what I used to do, my career, and I was going through this custody battle. Finally got my kid, 49% of the time. So my sponsor's at his annual 4th of July party. I show up to pick up my son. I got my court papers in my hand. I knock on the door and she says, you're not taking him. I say, yeah, I am. She says, right here. I'm taking him. It's my weekend. You're not taking him. One thing led to another. She punched me in the face, blah, blah, blah. She calls the cops. Cops show up. The first two saying, we're going to send you home, but we got to call a supervisor. Supervisor comes out. He goes in the house, comes back out. At that time, I carried a badge. And he says, you're one of these punks that should have never carried a badge. So right away, I knew I was in trouble. He took that little, I said, you know, it's my weekend. It says it right here. He took that paper from me, snatched it out of my hand, crumpled it up, stuffed it in my pocket, cuffed me up, and sent me to jail. So what I recognized at that particular time is I need to quit making my decisions off my emotions. Everything was emotional when I got here. I never thought everything out. And you know, after about 2 years, when it finally seeped in about quit making my choices off my emotions, one day I go pick up my kid and she says, you're not taking him. You know what I did? I got right in my car and I left. Because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous teaches me. Sometimes the teachings are tough. And now that we're on that subject, you know, I paid child support for his 18 years of his life. I made the mistake of paying the last 12 cash. So I just got hit with some papers not too long ago that I owe all this back support. It doesn't affect my whole life on a daily basis. I'm able to put it away for this particular moment. We go to court, they'll handle it. But see, if I track what got me in this situation over 19 years ago, it was that booty call. So that's part of what's happened here, man. I got to take responsibility. I'm able to take issues that were one-time federal cases. Everything was a federal case when I got here, man. Everything, man. Because I was so sensitive, but I was tough on the outside. And that was my problem. I lied on the outside and I was dying on the inside, man. I could never ever tell you I needed your help because I was full of pride. I could never ever tell you or ask for help or I needed a hug. And today, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got a life. You know, I'm retired now. I've got some medical issues that I've been dealing with. I had 7 surgeries in 2017, but I used the icing method. I didn't have to get on all these medications they want to give you. And I wouldn't change any part of my life at all. I wouldn't change my sister's suicide, my failed relationships, my DUIs, my bankruptcies, my lying, thieving, and cheating a woman. I wouldn't change any of that shit because you know what? All that got me here. And once I was able to start breaking it down and start taking a look at myself, things started changing, man. When I quit looking at others, man. I was good at looking at what was wrong with you and could tell you what was wrong with you, but I could never take a look at myself, man. The art of self-examination. AA's been a blessing in my life, my family's life, the people that are around me. Today I can walk in a meeting, shake people's hands. When I first got here, I was wondering why everybody shook all the old-timers' hands and shake my hand. And we had this old-timer that would come in and he'd shake everybody's hand. Well, I hated half the room, and he's not on my side, he's on their side. But he'd come over and shake my hand. I didn't understand all this shit about live and let live. Like Linda talked about earlier, Rule 62, don't take life so seriously, man. Everything was serious, man. There's time to be serious, there's time not to be serious. I just live one day at a time. I'm grateful one day at a time. And sometimes I get ungrateful, and I come to meetings and I get back grateful, man. It's like I said earlier, it was, what do I put in the meetings instead of what can I take out of a meeting today? And they talk about, if you're on a pink cloud, you better have that pink parachute. Because when the shit hits the fan, the foundation. What am I building my foundation out of? Concrete, rebar? Or am I building that house of cards that I've always built it out of? And the first time some storm comes, I go out and have a drink today. Today, drink is not a solution to the problem. Picking up the phone, calling another alcoholic, working the steps, 11-step prayer, 3rd-step prayer, picking up that book and reading any page in there will give me a solution to my problem. Funny, I picked it up again before I just walked up here, man. And there was a sentence and some shit that I always read. I never knew that sentence was there. So it tells me I'm not the smartest guy in the world. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love you people. I appreciate you allowing us to come out here on this short notice. And in a couple months, hopefully, if all this lifts, Michael will be speaking up in Oregon, so that's how I pay his ass back, And that's what we do for each other, man. We participate in our own recovery. We have fun. We love each other no matter what. No matter what color you are, what you believe in, what you don't believe in, how you got here, how much you drank, how much you didn't drink. Whatever sex you are, even if you think that you're Mr. A, we love you, man. Because they told me we'll love you so you could love yourself. I didn't know anything about that, man. That shit went right over my head. Today it does. It goes right to my heart, man. I love you people. Thanks for allowing us to come out here and share our experience. Thank you.